This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is prime time here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown and Mike Somich just went through the AFC offenses, the NFC offenses, the giant difference in the two with all of that. Don't worry, stick around. We'll put all of this stuff together. We'll preview all of the games with all of this data, let you know what we think about all of those, the chances of these teams advancing and which ones we actually like. Mike, you saw that Jim Harbaugh said, like, don't worry, John will have a job next year. It's almost as he's like, yeah, don't worry about that. He's not going to sit out a year. He'll have a job next year.
Yeah, he's going to get his pick of the litter. Yeah. I mean, that to me is a more interesting conversation of what do you make of John Harbaugh? Where would you rank him as a head coach inside the NFL? And I realize there's a lot of coaches who aren't as good as John Harbaugh, but if you're going out there and you're trying to, you know, fill one of these head coaching positions, is he just a slam dunk hire? Don't even think about it. Or do you look at some of the things that have come out of Baltimore with this lack of looking at analytics, the fact that they've blown so many double digit leads in the fourth quarter over the last few years, the fact that you haven't had that playoff success in a while and you needed a generational defense to win a Super Bowl? Like, where do you rank him when you look at him as a head coaching prospect for one of these franchises?
Yeah, I mean, I'm king. I hate retreads. Like, and I understand that some of these dudes that get jobs for the first time, like, absolutely flop. But then let's also kind of start to look at what we're seeing in the NFL right now, Mike, and some of these dudes that did get shots that are now propelling these teams to, you know, new heights and stuff like that. I know there are some teams that probably need a different type of coach, kind of that veteran presence and that type of demeanor and whatnot. But I don't know. It seems like once you get a job in the NFL, you are just always destined to get another job. Like, it's like, all these other teams refuse to be like, you know what? Maybe he's not as great anymore. You know, it's like, no, he must still be the dude he was 18 years ago. Like, I don't know. I'm anti-retread, but that's just me.
Well, he's also up there. He's like 63 now. So yeah. He's not a like spring chicken when you're looking at it that way. And I'm not anti-retread. I am anti someone who doesn't dominate a side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And for everything that John Harbaugh is, he is more of a CEO than an offensive or defensive guy. He doesn't have a special. He was a special teams coach before he took over that specific position with the Baltimore Ravens. I want an offensive coordinator as a head coach, because you know who the most likely person to leave your franchise is? Your offensive coordinator, who could then go somewhere and get hired, right? I would like that guy to be managing my team, so I know I'm not losing the most important person on the most important side of the football. And to me, that's where, like, I'd probably take Stefanski over Harbaugh if I was hiring right now. I'd rather, if I'm going to take one of the two, one of the experienced guys, give me the offensive guy instead of someone who is more of the CEO culture top-down guy who is going to lose his coordinators. And by the way, lost Mike McDonald last year, 2 years ago, to the Seahawks, and we've seen what that defense has done there and what the defense has done in Baltimore. He needs good assistants to be overly successful. If you have good assistants, you know what happens, Matt? You'll lose them. Yeah. That, to me, is like, it's not necessarily someone I want to hand the keys to.
Some baseball news. The Chicago Cubs trade for Edward Cabrera, so they get him from the Marlins, do send one of their top prospects over to the Marlins, kind of like the Marlins MO, right? Like, they build a guy up, trade him away for prospects. It's kind of what the Marlins do. But I will say this from a Cubs rotation standpoint, though, Mike, it's going to be Cabrera. You got Matthew Boyd. You got Jameson Taillon. They still have Imanaga. Steele's trying to get back from the elbow injury. He could be the fifth guy. Of course, they've got a younger dude in Horton that could come in and stuff. So, like, it is it's an interesting little rotation there for the old Cubbies.
It is. They paid a high price, but they got the most coveted piece on the trade market. This was someone who multiple teams were interested in. There were rumors that five or six teams were all interested in getting involved here. The Cubs gave up their number two prospect, number 49 overall in the majors, to go out and get their pitcher. Now it focuses on the free agency side of this for the Cubs. You got to fix the offense as well. Like you may not have Kyle Tucker back. He's a free agent. We'll see what they can do there. Bo Bichette's a free agent. You've got a group
Bregman's
of guys.
Still out there. The Bregman's still out there.
The Cubs have to go out and get somebody for that offensive piece of it, or else I'm not sure how much the rotation's going to matter.
But it is I like the move, though. I mean, it's you know what the Marlins do. The Marlins build a dude up, and they get rid of him, and so go and get him. And, yeah, you got to give up a prospect, but, I mean, prospects don't always pan out. This dude had a career year last year, 150 Ks and 137 innings. Like, he's – for a bad Marlins team, 3.53 ERA, I mean, that's good. That's a good get.
Yeah, I don't mind trading prospects for pitchers, especially. If you believe that they can be a middle to front of the line rotation guy – like you said, prospects don't always pan out. Go, and then you've got good young talent on the Cubs right now. You just need more top-tier offensive talent, and your prospect probably not going to jump right in there next year.
And in the tell me you don't care about playing basketball anymore without telling me that you don't care about playing basketball anymore, Trae Young has said he would like to go to the Wizards. That's where he would like to go. So
I mean, it kind of is a nice fit for Trae Young.
Yeah, I mean, the 10 and 25.
You don't have to have any defensive integrity.
Yeah, I mean,
you can throw up as many shots as you want. Like, what it kind of feels like a good fit.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's saying out loud what we all know anyway, which is like, I want to go where there's no pressure. No one's going to care.
Yep.
No one even remembers that there's a team. The Wizards even exist anymore. He's like, yeah, I'll just
maybe
go.
Maybe I can lead the league in scoring.
Yeah, like he's
– right?
Yeah, he's just really saying the quiet part out loud, which is – I don't really care about playing the full game of basketball anymore. I have a gigantic contract that I'm going to get for the next couple of years, and we'll see what happens after that. So, yeah, just ship me off to the Wizards. Who cares? Can you imagine? Can you imagine, like, saying that? Like, yeah, hey, agent, go out there and put out there that I want to go to the Wizards. And everyone goes,
I mean, they got cap space. That's the key, right? You go, he knows he can get he'll get re-signed there. He can be the face of the franchise. He can get up as many shots as he wants. Honestly, for Trae Young's game, it's a good fit. And people don't supposedly love playing with him. So you can go there. It's a young roster. You can just be the guy. Just do whatever you want. And, you know, and Washington gets a quote-unquote star in the process.
Yeah, typically you're not super beloved if you play absolutely zero defense. Like, most of them want you to play some sort of defense unless you're like Luka. You know, like, and if you do what Luka does on the offensive side, maybe you can get away with not playing defense. But, like, not if you're Trae Young.
Do you think Washington wants Trae Young? That, to me, would be the bigger question here.
That's also true. I don't know. We'll find out with, like, whether he ends up there and what they're willing to give up for him. I mean.
That's the other part of this. The fascinating market. Like, what is he worth? We've seen some of these ridiculous trades in the NBA with multiple firsts and everything. I can't imagine he is worth multiple firsts at this point.
Absolutely not. Miami and Ole Miss tomorrow. This is 3.5 in favor of Miami. As we said, when we were talking to Jared Smith a little bit earlier, 3.5's starting to get bought up, gone at Circa behind me, gone at the score as well. The 3.5's are very cheap 3.5's, Mike. So like I said, I'm wrong about this. I took the 3.5 thing and this thing might even run to 6 because I thought we were going to get the word that Ole Miss and LSU had quit playing nice. And that was going to be the end of the offensive coaches going over and helping out. Not the case. So I have 3.5. I mean, I guess it's not the worst of it. I just don't have the best of it. 52.5 is the prevailing total out there. I might end up buying off of that. I don't know. It all depends. I kind of like the Ole Miss side knowing that there's some consistency there.
Yeah, I have a Miami 3 at open. Yeah. Not for a lot. I thought it should be 3.5. It popped to 3.5. Now we're back at 3. This is going to be a fascinating game, Matt. Everyone's focusing on the offense for the Rebels against the defense for the Hurricanes, and for good reason. I mean, this is going to be the ESPN had an article, top 20 players in the final four of the college football playoffs. I think 11 of the 20 are going to be on the field when you have the Miami defense versus the Ole Miss offense. To me, the key here is the Ole Miss running game. If they can run the football, that is going to be a huge benefit against this Miami team because it takes the teeth out of that pass rush. If they are not successful consistently running the football, and they've been a very good rushing football team, then Miami's going to be able to pin their ears back. And I realize Chambliss was running for his life. You've got a different talent level coming after him here with Miami. I think that Miami wins if they stop the run. I think if they don't stop the run, this is a coin flip game. So I still lean toward Miami because I see a path. And I do think Miami's offense is going to have some success against the Rebels' defense. But I would want the 3-1-10 if I was going to get more involved.
One thing people like to talk about is the whole mentality change in college football when it comes to becoming a favorite, when you've been like the big dog and all of that or whatever. Are you worried at all about any of that? I mean, honestly, if this game were at one of the other stadiums, maybe, but I mean, it's a neutral field. It's where I don't know. It's hard for me to buy into the narrative stuff when it comes to all of that.
Yeah. Look, if Miami hadn't been a favorite the entire year. Okay.
Yeah.
But Miami's been a favorite in the majority of their football games that they have played. It's just the last couple that they've been a dog. And that's why the narrative is coming out. It's not like a team that doesn't know how to prepare as a favorite. I'm like narrative street. I'm more worried about Ole Miss rebounding against Georgia of a highly emotional game against a conference rival where they had to come back from being down, avenging their only loss on the season. And now you got to get up and get ready for Miami the next weekend. That to me a bigger issue considering Miami has not had to play one of those games. They kind of, they won a close game early against A&M, but then they were in control against Ohio State. Emotionally, I have more concerns around Ole Miss than I do Miami.
The old hypotheticals are out. Miami would be a 5.5-point dog to Indiana. Ole Miss would be an 8.5-point dog to Indiana. Miami would be a 1.5-point dog to Oregon, and Ole Miss would be a 4.5-point dog to Oregon.
Kind of makes me want to play Oregon to win the title. Because if they get past Indiana, you're getting a pretty good number considering what you're seeing here in the future lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're going to be, and especially if it's Ole Miss, a fairly significant favorite, you know.
Yeah. Oregon against Indiana on the money line, I would put some on that +330 to win the national title.
We talked about the offenses, which left a lot to be desired, but the AFC defenses, that's where they shine. We'll break those down when we come back.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is Primetime here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Matt Brown and Mike Somich. And let's get into kind of a fun discussion here, because as bad as the AFC offenses are to really kind of break down and get into, it's just as fun to see how good the defenses are. I mean, we get down here, Texans, Broncos, Jags, Chargers, Patriots, like, 5 of the 7 are good defenses by almost every metric when we start to kind of break things down. Now, there are little things to nitpick, certainly with the Pats and the run defense, et cetera, but, you know, for the most part, defenses you really, really like. And even the Steelers and Bills, while they certainly have their deficiencies, have at least something that you can kind of lean on, Mike. So as bad as the offenses are, the defenses certainly give you something to latch onto if you want to back one of these teams and think one of these teams can actually win the whole thing.
Well, defense wins championships, Matt.
So
never
they
forget
say.
That.
So they
the
say.
More important side of the ball, yes. Right? Look, this was fun for a couple reasons. First off, it was fun because there are, like you said, 5 legitimately good defenses inside this conference. Really 4+1 in my mind, 4.5. I have the Pats as kind of straddling that really good line. I will tell you this, though. Doing this exercise, I realized how much better I like Houston's defense than anyone else in the conference or in the National Football League. I think they are number one with a bullet. I think they are their own tier. I think this is the one defense that has multiple legitimate pass rushers, multiple different shutdown cornerbacks, a good linebacker level, and an excellent secondary level at the safety position. So I think Houston is one, and I think they are a tier in amongst themselves here in the AFC as well as in the NFL.
So one of the things you start to notice whenever you do the breakdowns is that Houston's defense did show up every week all year. So that's kind of the biggest difference, which is what I like what you're saying about them, because at the end of the day, you can look at some of these other defenses and certainly had spurts of greatness. I mean, if I just go to week 10, the Jags defense is actually third overall in the NFL in EPA allowed, right? But then if you go full season, that kind of that does start to go away a little bit. Now, I certainly weight heavier towards the end of the season than the beginning of the season because, hey, let's be for real. We need to know what have you done for me lately. But you know who's always inside that top five, six, seven in pretty much every single thing all year long is that Texans defense. And so it just shows from a pressure rate standpoint, from a sack standpoint, from having Stingley as an elite corner to being able to get these quarterbacks doing things that they don't really want to do. The Houston Texans did that pretty much most weeks throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, and they are able to – the run stop, which is the weakest part of this defense, has been top 15, top 10 through the majority of the season as well. That sets themselves up to be able to rush the passer. What they can do is also unique because they can blitz and play man and stop you. Or they can rush four and get home and play zone or a version of hybrid man zone, the two deep. Whatever they want to do, they can do stylistically, which also makes it difficult to prepare against them as an offense because they can choose how they want to attack you. They can change their game plan week in and week out because of the diverse skill sets they have. Not every defense in the AFC able to be so multidimensional.
Yeah, it is something that if they can at least – you know, you hear it all the time because everyone wants to keep pointing at that New York Giants team with Eli Manning, whatever. But if you can just kind of get hot on the offensive side of the ball, this defense is not going anywhere. Like, the defense is going to be there, barring injury, of course. But, I mean, we're just going to assume health here throughout the course of the playoffs. The defense is going to make it where teams do not score a ton of points on you. So if there is one team that I do kind of look at that if you just ran like the sun – Houston would be that team that I think could kind of be that come out of nowhere type team. And everyone looks back going like, where the hell did they come from? And it's like, well, the defense was always there and they played 25% better on offense than they did all year long.
Well, and we talked about like having a kryptonite. If you look at the AFC offenses and their kryptonite, every single one of them is Houston's defense, right? Like, so there is an immediate layer there of, well, we're going to struggle against Houston. So the question really is, can that offense just produce enough? Can they get to 20 every single game? That probably is good enough to be able to get through the AFC if they're able to get to that 20-point mark.
Yeah, just really, really, really interesting with them. Now, you get to the Broncos, and they're kind of get mentioned in the same breath. And, Mike, while they do have an elite corner, and certainly the defense is good, what can't be said about this defense that can be said about the Texans is – that they showed up all year long. Because if you start to go in and you break down stuff, certainly whenever you take out garbage time, which, listen, good on this team for them being in games where they had garbage time and stuff like that. You can see the blowout of the Cowboys. You can see they were that Chiefs, the last two games of the year with the Chargers and the Chiefs and things like that and whatever. I mean, like, yeah, there were games that had garbage time, whatever, but you like filter out garbage time with this defense. And it is, it's certainly not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not elite. It's just, it's a very, very good defense, but it's not like in the same category as Houston.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I end up as well. And you have pieces of the Houston defense. You've got a very good pass rush, but you don't have two stars at both edges. You don't have the same threats up the middle. You've got a elite level cornerback, but you don't have the second one. Your safeties aren't nearly as good as what you've got in Houston as well. And so you have these dips in production from some of those places. And you also look at some of the big time games. You look at the Colts game in week two, where when the Colts were healthy on an offense, they moved the ball quite effectively against this defense. Like, well, it's early in the season. Well, what about that Jags game in week 16, where the Jacksonville pretty much just went up and down the field against this defense as well. So you have specific games where you can point to and say, they struggled when you face this style of offense. To me, that is the other issue here with a Denver defense that's not as multifaceted. They've got the one shutdown guy, but they can't really blitz and play man behind because you don't have anyone else who's really good on the shutdown side. Yeah. It makes it a little bit easier to try and beat them.
And that's the deal with, like, I think the separator of the two here. And there's nothing against blitzing. Don't get me wrong. I mean, like, if you blitz and you're really good at blitzing, then so be it. But you look at the pressure rate that they get, and they do that while still having to blitz about 30% of the time, whereas you look at Houston and the pressure that they get, and they blitz about 19% of the time, right? And so, like, you're getting equal pressure rate, a little bit more on the Texan side, actually, with not having to blitz, which obviously gives you a better advantage whenever you're trying to defend the pass.
Exactly. And it allows you to have more people in the back. It makes it more congested. If you're in the red zone, you're able to cover a lot more ground. If you're only rushing four versus having to bring five, six, or seven to come after the quarterback, it also means that quarterbacks who are very good against the blitz, and some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL fall into that category of being elite against the blitz, makes it hard for them to be able to move the football. Also shuts down running quarterbacks, because all of a sudden you've got eyes on the quarterback consistently, because you don't need to have six guys, seven guys trying to rush. You're able to kind of just stay with your front four, rush forward, and you've got protection behind you. So for me, it was pretty easy to put the Texans one and kind of filter in the Broncos too. I did have the Broncos at their own level, but after that, I had the Jaguars relatively close to them. And this has been a debate between us all year long. The Jaguars were being fueled by turnovers early in the season. They didn't get as many turnovers late in the season, and we're still showing up as a above average to good defense consistently inside the NFL. I've got to give them their flowers. This is a better Jags defense than what I expected at the start of the year.
Yeah, so if you go to week 10, like we said, and kind of go to that midpoint of the season, you have two NFC teams in Seattle and New Orleans, and then you hit Jacksonville. I mean, like, Jacksonville is the number three defense in EPA per play given up since week 10 in the NFL. And if you go season-long DVOA, they're actually sitting there, Mike, at the sixth best defense, according to DVOA, over the course of the season. I think it's just, you know, listen, it's just a little bit under the radar because I don't think that they have the splash. You know, you got the defensive lineman guys there for the Houston. You got Stingley. You've got, you know, these guys over in Denver that are making all the headlines. You don't really have that necessarily in Jacksonville, and I think maybe that's why they flew under the radar a little bit. But this is definitely a defense that is going to keep that offense in games more times than not.
Well, that to me is the key. You don't have the names, right? Mm-hmm. Devin Lloyd obviously had a phenomenal season at linebacker. He was very good. You've got Josh Hines-Allen to try and rush the passer. You got Walker. There are decent names, but not like game-breaking names. And to me, the secondary is still a little bit of a scheme situation more than talent situation. So we'll see if anyone able to expose that in the playoffs here.
And then the Chargers, it's a good defense that has shown up pretty good. I just don't know how that is going to be able to hold up with on the offense and what everything else. It's like, it's, I feel like, yes, they're right to be kind of right there with the Pats. I just don't know if it holds up all playoffs.
Yeah, I have them a little higher than the Pats just because of what we saw them do the regular season. They're very good at stopping the big play, forcing you to methodically go down the field, try and get a sack, try and get a holding, try and get a turnover to be able to stop your drive, make you have those 10 to 12 play drives. And we saw that be very effective from a defensive style. The issue is, like, in that Houston game, they gave up two big plays. Mm-hmm. Like, they cannot give up big plays with this style of defense. So they have to make sure they lock those down. I've got them slightly ahead of the Pats.
Yeah, and they don't pressure the quarterback a ton. They don't get a ton of pressure on the quarterback, which I think could end up costing them over there as well. If you can get pressure on these quarterbacks, we talked about these offenses. We don't love them. So, I mean, go in there. Do that, guys. SharpPlays.com, trusted by the pros, monitored by the books. Go in, visit SharpPlays.com. Been around since 2011, all backed up with documented results, public logs, and transparent receipts. So go in today, SharpPlays.com.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is primetime here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Matt Brown and Mike Somich. Mike was watching something on his TV that he was not happy about. Was it I'm assuming
it's a hockey game.
It was a hockey game. Yeah, I assumed.
Yeah, Stars are playing the Capitals. May have dabbled in the over, and we're sitting at 2-0 here midway through the second period. I need a flurry of goals, Matt. Flurry of goals.
Now joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, one-third of the newly formed group that's going to buy a racehorse this coming year. Aaron Halterman joining us here on the program. We've decided maybe a buggy horse because we can run them like every couple of weeks, right?
That is the advantage of having a harness horse, as they call it. They do run every 2 weeks. I've got a buddy that has one, and they run sometimes even more than that. So you can run them a lot. The purses aren't as good, though. That's kind of your trade-off. Mm-hmm. And like Somich said off air, you still have to feed them. That's the same no matter what kind of horse you've got. Mm. So we'll see.
See, here's the thing, Matt. I got an idea. We'll name the horse Circa Grandissimo. Then you can check off your buy-in to Circa Grandissimo on the year and get a racehorse out of it.
Hey, if any horse feed company wants to sponsor this endeavor, and we're here, we're open. DMs are open. Come on in. We're open for business here as we buy our buggy horse and run him every 2 weeks to try and pay him off or something like that. So let's do that. But Aaron, you joined us each and every Wednesday. Do appreciate that, going through all of the college football picks, and then we switch to the NFL. Now we get both as we get down to the nitty-gritty here with all of this. So let's kick things off here. And you're going to go with the SEC team.
This is the toughest one for me to call, mm-hmm. and I'll be the first to tell you, and all credit to Mike Somich's Miami Hurricanes, I have been dead wrong about this team. I wasn't shocked they beat Texas A&M. I was shocked that not only that they beat Ohio State, but the way they beat them. And the thing that Miami's done in these two college football playoff games that they did at times during the regular season but not consistently, they've absolutely dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides. And specifically, defense is where you really look at it. Their defensive ends have absolutely wreaked havoc on Ohio State and Texas A&M. Now, I blow up Miami here, and I'm going to go Ole Miss plus the 3. It was 3.5. Now it's 3. Here's the deal with Ole Miss, why I think they'll be able to kind of counteract what Miami's been so successful at, and it's really one guy. It's Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback for Ole Miss. I just feel like he might be able to escape some of that pressure that the Miami defensive front has put on Ohio State and Texas A&M. I think Chambliss can get away. I think Chambliss is the best player left in the Final Four here. I think he was the best player in the playoff to begin with. And so his performance against Georgia, I think if you could get a similar performance here, I want Ole Miss in the points. I will say out of the two college football playoff games, it's the one I'm least confident on. But I do think Trinidad Chambliss and his ability to get out of the pocket and move will help kind of negate what has been just a fantastic performance by the Miami defensive front.
Since you are terrible at picking Hurricanes games, I appreciate you taking the Rebels here. So my Hurricanes can just move along, keep things rolling here, and get into that college football playoff final. In the other game, Indiana installed as a 3.5-point favorite, taking on conference rival, sounds weird, Oregon, who they faced up in Oregon, were 7-point dogs to earlier this season. What do you like here, Oregon and Indiana in the rematch?
Yeah, well, just real quick, you should be very happy because I picked against Miami twice, and here you are. But
good job.
Listen,
good
when
job
you look at this
keep it up.
Game, yeah, I know. I'm doing you a favor. Even though I give you a hard time on air, we're friends, so I am doing you a favor here. But look, this Indiana team, what they did in the Rose Bowl to Alabama was pretty special. And I know Alabama is not what they used to be. They're still a pretty good football team, and Indiana just destroyed them. And you look at this Oregon team, they're built a lot different than they've been the last couple of years. You know, they were kind of known as a flashy offensive team. That's not really Oregon this year. They're more of a, you know, rock'em sock'em defensive type of football team. I just feel like we saw this game not too long ago up in Oregon, and Indiana went in there and beat them, and they kind of controlled the line of scrimmage on both sides. I think they'll be able to do that again. You said it's weird that this is a conference, you know, conference rival, so to speak. It's just weird in general to see the name Indiana this far in this thing, guys. For somebody that's followed college football my whole life, just seeing the word Indiana in that Rose Bowl end zone last week was like, this is feels like a dream kind of, but you watch this football team. Last year, you know, Indiana was kind of like, they were a little phony. Like, you know, they kind of had skill guys, but the lines weren't really there. Talking about the offensive defensive line, they're stout now. That's the strength of the team. So I think they beat Oregon. We just saw this happen a few weeks ago. And I think now neutral field, I think Indiana is the play here. I'm happy to lay the 3.5 in this one.
All right, Aaron, there's going to be people on the other side of both of these. So we'll get you to kind of flip and play against your own bets. If Ole Miss can't keep it within 3.5, what did Miami do to make that happen? And then on the flip side, where does Oregon get the cover here in this thing?
Well, I think the Miami one is the easier of the answers. And I think it's very simple. Their defensive front overwhelms Trinidad Chambliss, and he can't get out of harm's way. And he does kind of feel pressured, gets sacks, makes mistakes. So I think the Miami defensive front, that's the key there. That'll can flip that game, in my opinion. You know, I think I have respect for Oregon, and I don't want to sit here and go, I don't think they have any chance, because I don't really think that, but I think Indiana's going to have to help them. I think they're going to have to turn the ball over a couple times talking about Indiana, maybe make a big mistake on special teams. I just feel like they're the more complete team. They're on both sides of the ball. So I look at the Miami game and I think, hey, they can kind of do things to flip this in their favor. I look at this game and think Indiana's going to have to help Oregon. So I think Oregon needs turnovers, and I think maybe a big mistake one way or the other from Indiana in the special team situation.
It's a wonderful 5 days of football here kicking off tomorrow. We've got the college football playoff on Thursday and Friday, NFL playoff Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Going to be a fun 5 days there. You got a couple bets coming from the NFL as well. We'll start out with the upstart New England Patriots, who are hosting a playoff game against the Chargers, who are going to go across the country and into the elements here. Patriots install as a 3.5-point favorite, total sitting at 46. What do you like here?
Well, what a playoff it's going to be in the NFL. I think this thing is the most wide open we've had in a long time. I do trust the Patriots in this game specifically. We'll take them one game at a time, like I said, with this NFL playoff. But I like the Patriots minus the 3.5 here. Look, I think they're a very good team. And I think this each week they've gotten better and better. I think at home, like you mentioned, in the elements, we saw, you know, in the past, of course, they had Tom Brady. That always helps. But this was a very tough place to go win a playoff game. And I think it's going to be that way again. Drake May has just been fantastic. The other side of this and why this is one I'm confident in, I think the Chargers have had a very good season. I think they're so beat up. And I think they have a fatal flaw in that offensive line. I don't think it's very good. I think Justin Herbert comes into this game. I mean, he's clearly injured with the finger, the broken finger on the non-throwing hand. But I think he's just beat up in general. So I think the Patriots can take advantage of a Charger team that I would say they're tough. The fact they're 11-6 in here, I think it's a good season for them. I don't know that they're going to have a lot of success in the playoffs. So I'm going to bet back the Patriots at home and lay the 3.5.
Let's head to Monday night, and I'm in agreement with you here. I do not understand all of the love on the Pittsburgh side of things. Home game, I guess, or something is what's going on with all of this. But outside of that, I don't know. Not much for me to love. Sitting 3 now, pretty much everywhere in the market, 39.5, the total. Tell me what you like about the Texans.
Yeah, I love the Texans minus the 3. And Matt, you know, I think part of it is the Texans, people have told me this at least, is like they haven't won a playoff road game. And it's like, yeah, they didn't go to Baltimore and win. They didn't go to Kansas City and win. Okay, well, were they really supposed to win those games? Not really. They would have been upsets, obviously, if they would have won either one of them. Just look at the point spreads there. And then look at the point spread here. They're 3-point favorites, and they absolutely should be. Look, the Steelers, I don't know if it's a good story or not. I mean, it's amazing that Mike Tomlin's got some kind of rabbit foot where he just keeps squeaking out these games, but it doesn't feel like they should. They're here. It is at home. You just look at this. Go, look what happened 2 weeks ago when the Cleveland Browns were able to put – and I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns here, right? We're able to put pressure on Rodgers and the Steelers. They totally shut them down. How does Houston not totally shut down Pittsburgh in this game? That's the thing. This Houston defense is fantastic. That's the reason they're here. That's the reason they've won 9 in a row. The defense is unbelievable. We kind of know the offense isn't going to be flashy, but I think the defense is going to totally shut down Pittsburgh. And I think it's going to be like a 20-7, 20-10 type of game, which will be an easy cover for Houston. I think, again, it's the Steelers, it's home, it's all this stuff, and people see an underdog and want to back them. I'm the opposite. I've watched this all year. I just think the Texans are a much, much better team.
He is Aaron Halterman, 1/3 of the group that is going to be buying a racehorse and doing content here on the network because of the racehorse that we own. Of course, you can find him with Mike over VSiN at the track as well. Ole Miss, Indiana Patriots, and the Texans, his plays for this week. Aaron, appreciate the time, buddy, and good luck.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Mike, I like this. The buggy horse, we race him every 3 weeks. It'll pay for the feed. Maybe we don't make money on this, but we don't lose money on it. And then we can talk about how our horse did every week. Well, every other week.
They actually run like once a week. You just run those suckers back in the harness races.
There we go. See, I love this. This is my new favorite thing, I think, of the week. As soon as football's over, I'm getting all over this. All of the research here. NFC defenses when we come back.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Primetime here on VSiN. going through, picking the horse I'm going to buy. Got me. I've got my eye on one. Got my eye on one.
Trying to help you.
You want to be a part of this. You want to be a part of this. Don't act like you don't. It's a Bob Baffert horse.
I think
horse.
I'm okay.
It's a Bob Baffert horse.
I've owned many racehorses in my day. I've retired from said ownership.
All right. Well, you're lost, buddy. You're lost whenever my guy wins the Kentucky Derby. Is he even on the...
I'll be rooting for you. Yeah, I'll even bet on it.
So, Mike, you know, one of the things that we hear, you and I do a ton of draft coverage, and why are these teams reaching for this quarterback? Or why are they taking a quarterback so early? And why, you know, this everything's quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. All right, you ready for this? Here's our playoff quarterbacks. Matt Stafford, number one overall. Trevor Lawrence, number one overall. Bryce Young, number one overall. Caleb Williams, number one overall. C.J. Stroud, number two overall. Sam Darnold, number three overall. Drake May, number three overall. Justin Herbert, number six overall. Josh Allen, number seven overall. Bo Nix, number 12 overall. Aaron Rodgers, number 24 overall. Jordan Love, number 26 overall. Jalen Hurts fell all the way to the second round at number 53. And the only one outside of that is Brock Purdy, and we know his whole story. So every single one of the playoff quarterbacks went no lower than the 53rd pick, and 12 of the 14 went in the first round.
Who would have guessed, Matt?
Right.
Like it's
why do you think they keep drafting them? Because when you land on one, it changes your franchise. Like, everyone wants to like beat these teams up about drafting quarterbacks. It's like, the proof is right here.
It's still comical to me when teams draft quarterbacks in the second, third, fifth, sixth round. Yeah, I get it. You're going to hit one out of 100 maybe that actually click and become a franchise quarterback. But you have to realize you're drafting in a one out of 100 type percentage chance. If you think about like elite level quarterbacks, third round or later, the list is not very long. Like it's Tom Brady. Yeah. I mean, it's Brock Purdy now, I guess. Like you don't have like a plethora of quarterbacks that you're excited about.
No, it's just you sit here and you look at this and I every year we hear this, like we're doing our draft prep and it's like the naysayers come in. Y'all, you can't take that guy in the first round. Can't take that guy that high. You can't, whatever. Well, you wonder why the teams do it. That's why. Because when you hit, you make the playoffs. That's why. That's why they do it.
Yep.
Well, and, unbelievable.
And it's like, it's especially because you need to have those right now with the way the salary cap's built. Being able to take a quarterback in the first round and having 5 years of that controlled contract makes it highly more likely you have 5 years or 5 year window to be successful, especially your 3 year, four and your five in there. So you have to figure out, okay, is this guy good or not? And look, if he's bad, guess what? You just draft another high in the first round because you're gonna have a good draft pick. So it's built to just kind of keep throwing darts.
Just crazy. Like, I mean, the proof is right there. So let's not hear that again this draft cycle. We're gonna hear it. We're going to hear it because outside of Moore and Mendoza, whoever the third name is that emerges, people are like, can't take that guy.
Third name is Ty Simpson.
Yeah.
He came out today.
Can't take that guy. You know, like that's the way that's going to go. All right. We've talked about some of these defenses over in the AFC. How about these NFC defenses? And not really anything to be ashamed of over there in the NFC, but not as deep and as super elite top heavy. But the Seahawks are definitely your number one defense over in the NFC. Mike, you look at the metrics, they are the number one defense DVOA over the course of the season. If all of the other stats that we like to go in, hey, let's just go back to week 10. Who's the best defense in EPA? Yeah, it's going to be the Seahawks. It's like this defense elite all year long. And is the only reason, and I will say this, it is the only reason that this team is in the playoffs and in the spot that they're in right now, because a defense that was lesser than the Seahawks would not have been able to survive the lulls that the offense and the pressure that the offense put them under over the course of the season.
This is also your top-rated special teams unit in the playoffs. So let's give the special teams a little love here. Yeah. Very good field goal kicker there. And by the way, JSN, probably offensive player of the year. So he has a little something to do with the playoff run as well. But to your point, this defense is the reason they have a first-round bye. It's a reason that they have been so dominant in a lot of different positions throughout the year. And it's not one that is constructed like the Texans. This is a scheme-em-up defense. You got to give a lot of credit here to Mike McDonald, who was able to ship himself across the country from Baltimore and the D.C. there, come to Seattle. Last year, you saw a lot of changes, controversial moves, cutting his top tackler through 8 weeks, making sure to get the right personnel in. They hit on the draft. Eamon Wari's been awesome for them as a kind of free safety. You can come up and play the slot as well. You've got two good cornerbacks, a good offensive line, got linebackers who are in the right position, but it's Mike McDonald's really scheming this defense up that has made them so dangerous and so effective. Extremely fast defense too, Matt. They can go sideline to sideline. They can run anybody down.
The 2-3 position, it's definitely between the Eagles and the Rams. I think there are points of emphasis on both of them that could make you want to say it's one or the other. I don't think there's a huge difference in the two, but they definitely fall in that second tier of the 2-3.
Yeah, they do. I put the Eagles 2, I put the Rams 3. But that could change as well. The Rams got some good injury news. Expecting to have Lake back for this game. He makes a big difference for that defense as their nickel cornerback. They were top 5 EPA, top 5 in most metrics when he was around. He's expected to be back now for the first round of the playoffs. I still prefer the Eagles just because this is, in my mind, a better schemed up defense with Vic Fangio leading the way there. The front four can consistently get pressure. You've got very good nose tackle play. They're going to get a push from the inside, which makes the quarterback's lives miserable. And then you've got multiple good pieces on the outside from a cornerback perspective that can make big plays that are ball hawks. So I like the Eagles defense a little bit more, but the Lake addition does make me at least pause a little bit to put them ahead of the Rams.
The thing that I like about the Eagles defense, and I know people kind of roll their eyes, I like to talk a lot about explosive plays, but that's honestly what flips the field, right? That's how you like change the course of a game and at least get yourself points on the board, right? I mean, explosive play can automatically get you into field goal range and can automatically get you down into the red zone and all that. And Mike, like, the Eagles defense from a pass perspective just does not give up big pass plays. I mean, they were fourth overall in the NFL over the course of the entire season in limiting explosive passes. And then if you look over the last 6 weeks, which again, down the home stretch here, they're the number one defense in the NFL in preventing explosive plays. And so you look at that and how does a team, let's say this Eagles team gets up on you 10 points, gets up on you 13 points, gets up on you 20 points, you're going to have to still put together kind of these like methodical drives. I mean, like, you're going to play faster and you're going to try for more shots and stuff, but like the success rate of that, at least according to the stats, is not going to be very high.
No, it starts with this cornerback unit, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Quinyon Mitchell, who's like a number one elite level cornerback. You've got Cooper DeJean playing the slot. And then the addition at the deadline too, adding Jalen Phillips. That was a big time addition here from a pass rush perspective. He was very good in Miami before multiple big injuries, comes back, had not played as well the first half of the season. His career got rejuvenated when he got to Philadelphia. He's been a game changer for them and gives them a real legitimate pass rush threat there. So if you do get down, all of a sudden, now you have a legitimate pass rush coming from the outside and top-tier cornerbacks who are able to cover you. It makes it very, very difficult. And another front four that doesn't need to blitz. This is like Houston, where they can rush four, and they've got athletes all over the place to cover on the back end.
The San Francisco defense, by far the worst of the seven, Mike, at the bottom, I think, with a bullet. If you look over the course of the season, the only defenses that are below them are all the ones you would expect. The Jets, the Commanders, the Cardinals, the Titans. Like, I mean, really, all the defenses you would expect to be below them are below them, and that's it. Like, there's no surprises. And then if you hit the 49ers, like, how does this team win all these games? Well, it's a pretty soft schedule, and like we said, the offense is elite.
Yeah, they don't do anything well. They don't stop the run. They don't rush the passer. One of the worst teams in pressure rate in the NFL. One of the worst run stop teams. Their secondary doesn't cover well. They don't limit explosives. In my mind, the worst of the 14 teams here in the playoffs. I have them slightly worse than the Bills here on the defensive side. The Packers, the Panthers, and the Bears, 4 through 6, I think are very interesting. To me, they're close to interchangeable. I did put the Panthers 6. Part of that was because of what I believed about this team before the season. I do think they played better than expected. The Packers, to me, the injuries are what put them at 5. So I ended up with the Bears, their number one turnover defense in the NFL, sitting there at 4, the Packers at 5, and the Panthers 6. However, I wouldn't argue with you if you put any of these three teams in any order here, 4, yeah. 5, and 6.
So what we do notice, though, Seahawks, Eagles, Rams, the top of both, you know, at the top of both of the lists here, which, again, kind of puts together complete teams that I think maybe could make it all of the way. The other part that you don't like is these teams that, oh, maybe at the top in one, not so much in the other. The 49ers, I don't think is a real contender. Panthers at the bottom of both categories, Packers and Bears in the middle. Where do you never want to be? In the middle of all of these. And so kind of tipping my hand here of these teams that I like the best moving forward in all of this and teams that I actually truly believe in my heart of hearts can make it all the way through. And that's kind of what this exercise really, really highlighted. Kind of felt like I knew it anyway, but it really kind of highlighted that.
Yeah, for me, it highlighted one thing, which we'll get to when we reveal our top 14 in order. But I probably have to put a bet in on one team.
When we come back, Jeff Schwartz is going to join us, former NFLer. Let him give us what he thinks about his Oregon Ducks and their chances and all things NFL wildcard round.